Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I am Leona Abraham Brando, host for Blog Talk Radio, Shedding Light. Today we have a special guest that's going to be back with us. She was on quite a while ago, who has been working diligently to end the human rights violations in and around the country and the penal system. Anita Wills is a writer, author, speaker, and community activist. Some of her books include, but are not limited to, A Nation of Flaws and Just Us in the Homeland, a historical account of policing in America. Ms. Wills' activism began when her son, Terry Baxter Sr., was wrongfully convicted of second-degree murder in 2003. Yet, as though that was not painful enough, when her grandson was shot and killed in Oakland, her activism took a new turn. On March 29, 2012, Ms. Wills led a million hoodie march in San Francisco in support of Trayvon Martin. She traveled with a group of activists to Ferguson, Missouri, and was one of the protesters assailed by police with pepper spray and rubber bullets. Ms. Wills advocates around many issues, including wrongful convictions, desperate sentencing of African Americans, sentencing reform, prisoners' rights, and ending money bail and police accountability. I'm going to let her tell the story, but right now I wanted to talk about some of these things because there's so much going on in this country, so much going on in this country, that we need to start looking at some of these things. Today there was at the Capitol, discussions about what happened. If you can excuse me for 1 minute, she's having problems coming in. This gun control in the United States has gotten, it's gotten to the point now where, because of the lack of gun control, we're hearing about mass shootings almost every single day. There was a meeting today. There was a discussion. I guess they were going to decide how they were going to do this, and it was supposed to be a bipartisan meeting, and it had a lot of the people that were involved. So what we need to look at right now in this country, the mass shootings, some politicians will try to blame it on the individual doing the shooting, while others are blaming it on the guns. Well, it could be a little bit of both, because people should not be buying guns so easily when there's psychological issues, but yet they should not be put in prison even. They should not be put in prison. What they need is long-term residential treatment facilities. What they need is gun control. And I hope that these politicians, these people who are leading the country, this government, of many of them all the time, are saying we're doing it for the American people. And I keep saying, wake up. They're not doing anything for the American people except whatever is going to benefit them. And they're arguing. They're so divided that they've caused the whole country to become divided. So let's hope and pray that this whole event that took place today on television will stop so many guns from being given out, and there will be some control over all of these things. We have a problem in this country that needs to be addressed, and there's so many issues that need to be discussed. But I'm not going to tell the story because Anita knows it all too well. Losing a son to incarceration on a wrongful conviction and losing a grandson to death, and she will be talking about it now. So why don't we now... Anita, can you hear me?
Yes.
Can you do me a favor, and whatever that is going on in the background, can you mute it or whatever? It's making an awful loud sound.
Is that better?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Anita, I wanted to ask you if you can introduce yourself, which I'm sure many people know of you, because Anita has been out there in advocacy work for many, many years. And she is also has written some books, which I'm going to ask her at the end or sometime during the interview if she can tell you how to get in contact with her to even purchase the books. But Anita, can you please introduce yourself and let everyone know what your story is all about and how you came to be in the advocacy field?
Yes. Thank you for having me, Leona. I'm an activist. My name is Anita Wills. I was born in Pennsylvania, in a rural area of Pennsylvania, but I currently reside in the Bay Area. And
can I interrupt you for just a minute? You have a unique culture too. You are of an Indian tribe, and what is the name of your tribe?
Yes, I'm Afro-Indigenous. And I am the member of the Monacan Indian Nation, which is in Virginia. And our history, our Native American history, is one of conquering, of being conquered, just like the Africans, our enslaved African ancestors, is one of being moved around and conquered with the barrel of a gun. In other words, America, when we were colonized, they used guns to colonize, to kill off Native Americans, to remove them from the land. They used guns to bring Africans to this land, and mostly African children, to work the land. So we, as an Afro-Indigenous person, my activism is a double-edged sword, because both of us, my indigenous and African ancestors were subjected to a cruel genocidal treatment by the colonial government that came to the Americas.
And the reason I ask is because Chinupa Guhamani, he has Jibril Salam, on Friday and Saturdays, they do the radio shows, and Chinupa Guhamani has been talking for some time now about the same thing, about the tragedy that happened with the Indian culture, but also the fact that he tries to bring people of color together because he knows of the history of the oppression that they have gone through. So I'm going to stop interrupting, but real quickly, I just wanted to find out. We have a call on 323.
Hello, Leona. This is Joe. I just called in. Don't really know much about what's happening on the show, but thought I'd call in and give some support if I could.
Okay, thank you. We have Anita Wills on the show with us today, and Anita Wills is an activist, and she has written 6 books, but her son was wrongfully and she can tell the story. She's going to be telling it anyway. But Anita, go on to the story. And we have Joe on the phone, on the show. He calls in now and then, and he does actually provide support and also to learn more and to share more. So if you can continue.
Yes. The reason of I became an activist back in 2001 was because my son was arrested and charged with a crime that he did not commit, and that the DA, the judge, the courts, the police knew he did not commit. And they set about to convict him on the fact that he was a black man, period. And that he was chosen because he was involved in an altercation where he was shot at by this young man. My son was 31 years old back then. and a young man who assailed him, another African-American male, he was 21. And he had a troubled past, the young man, and he was he shot at my son. He had pulled my son over, and they were talking, and he accused my son of lying on him, pulled out a gun and shot at my son and missed him. And my son pulled out a weapon and shot this kid in the foot. And the kid ran up the street. And up the street was another African-American man who had come out behind my son and this young man. They had come out of a bar. The young man went into the bar with his friends and asked my son to come down the street with him. But this other man had come out the bar behind them. And it's important to say this because people understand, you know, if they see a picture of what happened and how it's impossible that my son, you know, could be guilty of second-degree murder because of the way that it went down. The guy that came out of the bar behind them was standing up almost two blocks away, and the police said that a bullet ricocheted almost two blocks and hit this man in the heart and killed him. And this is what they charged my son with. They charged my son with second-degree murder. And even though there's witnesses that say that that guy was shot by a drive-by shooter, it's in writing. I have it. The witness statement. The police, the Oakland Police Department, along with the DA, said that my son's bullet killed this man. It hit him in the heart. And the man fell to the ground, and he actually bled out because nobody saw him as he fell to the ground. They didn't see him, or they didn't call an ambulance, right? And by the time that they saw him and took him to the hospital, he was still alive, but he died at the hospital. He bled out. And the DA and the coroner's report says that the man was not shot through the heart. He was shot scapula, which is above the neck, and the bullet went down and nicked his heart. That's totally different from what the police said and what the newspapers reported. The newspapers reported he was shot through the heart, and that's a big lie. But they chose to come after my son and to make the 21-year-old who had originally shot at my son his victim. And once they did that, then the judge said that nothing against this kid, the 21-year-old, could come into the court. So when Carrie said, he shot at me first, they did not bring the GSR report that they had taken at the hospital of the young man, which will show that he actually shot a gun, because the young man said he never shot a gun. He has never shot a gun in his life. And that was a lie. He was on probation in another county for just that, for shooting a gun, for robbing people, you know, but none of that came into court. None of it. Because the DA and the police wanted Carrie in jail. They wanted to convict Carrie because they felt like, I'm guessing they felt like he was one of these uppity Negroes because he worked, he had a job, you know, he had a long-term girlfriend, he had children, he was paying taxes. Everything that he had, they were willing to take away from him.
How long has he been in now, Anita?
He's been in 22 years.
And did he have a lawyer representing him, a paid lawyer, or was it a court-appointed public defender?
At first, he had a court-appointed attorney. And what happened was that they gave the kid who was testifying against him the same attorney. And Carrie, my son, said, I don't want the same attorney as him. He's testifying against me. So I had money. I got $15,000 together, and Carrie told me, "Oh, this guy is, you know, this attorney has been coming up to jail because my son was in jail for 2 years before he went to trial, and he said that he could get me off, that they don't have anything against me. His name is Richard Holmes, and he said he'll take $15,000. I said, I will, okay, because the people, the attorneys I was talking to wanted at least $25,000, and I only got $15,000. So I gave this Richard Holmes, who had been going up to the jail, $15,000 without checking and finding out that he was being disbarred, even at the time he was up in that jail talking to my son, that he was on suspension, and they were looking to disbar him. And then he was, during the time he was representing Carrie, he would be on, you know, they were still trying to suspend him. But I did not know that until after the trial. Also, that this attorney, his father was a judge in that same court and had been representing Huey Newton and was a friend of the judge who was now on my son's case. He was a friend, right? And the guy who got killed had been in that court and was a death penalty qualified juror for the same judge that was on my son's case. All of these connections, and there's no way that the court did not know that Richard Hove was being suspended from the bar. How could they not know? You know, I mean, I was trying to get my son out, and they did, and I didn't believe, and nor did he, that he would even be convicted because they had no proof.
You know,
so
that's
what
the
they
problem.
Did was,
that's the problem.
They got
that's
an all-white.
That's the problem in this.
They
country.
Got an all-white jury. They got an all-white jury. This is in Oakland, California. They struck all the black jurors, and they got an all-white jury from the suburbs. And even that, at them having an all-white jury, it took 4 days for them to come back and find my son guilty.
I find that happening an awful lot, too, with the jury. First of all, the inadequacy in the choosing of the juries. It's happened
yeah.
all too often, whereas the majority of jurors have been white, and maybe one or two, or they'll put three on, and by the time they get to the case, the trial, they'll have eliminated one. This happens often. I wanted to ask you
yeah.
real quickly, Anita, too, the situation, and we'll go back to your son's situation, but can you talk a little bit about
mm-hmm.
The death of your grandson as well?
And at this time that this was all happening, my grandson, Carrie Jr., was 10 years old. And the Oakland police went to his school in Berkeley, pulled him out of the school in front of his classmates and set him in the back of their police car. He had no idea what was happening. And he sat there until his mother came. And he said when his mother came, the police pulled a gun on her in front of him. Shackled her and took him and her down to the police station. And my son, my grandson was never the same after that. Plus, when they went home to their apartment in Berkeley, this happened in Oakland with my son. They went in and tore up the apartment. They cut the boys' bunk beds, tossed the living room furniture, and just went in like a hurricane and tore up their apartment. And then they came to my place, and I was home. And they're banging on the door and trying to get in, and I'm like, see, I'm not, you know, I didn't know what was happening. I'm like, oh, you know, who is this? And I wouldn't let them in. I was on the door. I was leaning on the door, and I saw this little white hand trying to show me a warrant for them to come in. And then I saw the warrant, I opened the door, and they never did tell me what it was they wanted at that point. I didn't know why they were there. And they just went through my apartment, went in my room, in my closet, pulled out clothes, pulled out boxes, took my computer and other stuff. And none of it that I got back. I got the computer back, but they had, by the time I got it back, they had erased the hard drive. And when they took the computer, I said, please don't erase my hard drive because I have, you know, I have my manuscripts on there because I was writing books back then, you know. And they made sure to erase the hard drive. And I had to go downtown to the police department and complain in order to get my computer back. I never did get the other stuff they took. My son did not live with me. So I don't know, understand why they went and took all the stuff they took out of my apartment. But they didn't tear it up because I said, if you tear anything up in here, I'm calling the NAACP. And they were like, you know, they stopped. I said, dang, they scared the NAACP. But they didn't tear up my apartment, but they did come and take things out. And I didn't know what was going on in Berkeley with my grandson at the time.
10 years old.
By the time, yeah, he was 10. By the time that I figured out where they were, because there was two grandsons, and my other grandson, he was at school. So I wanted to know where they were and what was going on. Why were they looking for my son? I didn't know. And they weren't telling me. And I located them. And I think they went back home that night. I didn't see them until the next day. And then I found out why they were looking for my son, you know, about this. They were looking for my son because he had left, you know, he had left the scene. He had run because that guy had shot at him. And then there were other guys with that guy. So he was running, and he just ran and didn't even know. He thought they were looking for him because he had shot the guy in the foot. He didn't know until later that there was somebody been shot up the street. He didn't know that until later. And so when the police were looking for him, of course they were saying they want that he was armed and dangerous. And so I, you know, located him. I found out where he was, and we spoke on the phone, and I arranged a peaceful surrender because I knew if the police saw him, they were going to kill him on sight. And I arranged a peaceful surrender with another attorney. And that's how he lived to turn himself in. And I told him, I said, you have to come in and you have to fight this. You can't let them lie on you like this. You have to come in and fight. And that's what he did.
You know, I really, and getting back to your grandson again, with all of this mm-hmm. stuff that's going on, everything that was going on and everything, how did he get killed?
But he was...
Was it around the same time, or was it much later that your grandson got killed?
It was 10 years later. 10 years later. It was almost 10 years later. He was being harassed by those same policemen because the police have what they call gang units, but in Oakland, right? But these gang units are actually a gang of police that go around harassing young black men. And they were seeing Carrie on the street, Carrie Jr., and they said, oh, we know who you are. We got your dad. We're going to get you like we got your dad. So for like from the time he was 10 until the time he was murdered, he said he would tell me that they were harassing him, the police. They would see him on the street. And when he was 19, after New Year's, like January the 16th, 2011, He was lured down to a park, which is a park where there was a lot of stuff going on in that park. And I don't believe that Carrie, my grandson, would have gone down there without being lured. And in fact, the girl that took him down there had been an ex-girlfriend, and her and this other young lady, they were hooked up with the police. because, you know, the police in Oakland were running prostitutes. This lady, this young lady named Celeste Gua, she had a case in which the police were pimping her, and they were beating up her pimps, guys down around that park. She was in that same area. So when I heard that a young man was killed down there, I thought, well, you know, I know that wouldn't be Carrie because he wouldn't go anywhere where the police are patrolling or in control of. But it was him. And he had taken these two young ladies down to that park. But he didn't go in the park. They asked him to drive him down and wait for him. And that's what he did. And they, and the one girl told me that her friend got on the phone and these men came and started beating up Carrie. They were, and she said they were dressed in black. They ran him around the corner and were shooting at him. Shot him, you know, like dead center in the back, like the police do. And the neighbors who I spoke to said that there was nobody, there was all kinds of shells on the street where my grandson was running. And he was running on the streets. He was weaving. And it just, and the fact is, when they said he was weaving, my heart broke because I told him when he was younger, I said, if anybody ever shoots at you, you weave. Weave like a snake, you know, back and forth. Don't run in a straight line. And that's what he was doing. And they killed him. They shot him through the back and killed him and left him on the street. And that, and the only people that the neighbor said was around my son were the police. The police were around my grandson as he lay on the street. And it was in front of a church on a Sunday night. My grandson was laying on that sidewalk for 4 hours. For 4 hours. And, you know, they just let him bleed out. They didn't even call an ambulance. And the priest from the church said that he wanted to give him last rites, and they wouldn't let him near him. The police wouldn't let him give my grandson last rites as he lay there dying. And the other thing is, even if you doubt that, I don't doubt the way they treated me after this happened.
You know,
They came and brought me the card from the morgue, from the you know, the morgue. They didn't take it to his mother, who lived in Oakland where he was killed. They brought it to me, who lives in another city, and gave and left that card at my front door. And when I left my house to go, and you know, to his mother's, my grandson's mother's house, it fell in my hand. It was from the coroner's office telling me to call them, you know. And that's, you know, to me, it was like they were upset because I'm defending my son on Facebook and blogging about my son and talking about them, calling them out by name, you know. And if I'm so wrong, if I'm lying about my son being wrongfully convicted, then why don't they call me out? Why are they, you know, harassing my grandson and telling them they're going to kill him and harassing him to the point where he was having a nervous breakdown? He didn't even look like himself just before he was murdered. He was so upset and scared the last time I saw him. And we were talking about sending him to Florida so he could go to college because he didn't feel safe in Oakland or in the Bay Area, you know?
I can understand.
But it's directly tied to my son because the same policeman who lied to get my son convicted was over the homicide of my grandson, the same one who had come to my house and tore up my house, you know, and looking, you know, went through my closet and sat down and looked me in the face. The same one, because they have gang units in the Oakland police have gang units. And I'm very concerned because they were under federal mandate And now they are about to be from under the federal mandate. They were under federal mandate for killing black people and brown people with impunity. And now they are about to be removed from the federal mandate. But yet my grandson's murder has become a cold case almost immediately. I'm being harassed by these same officers that are a part of the gang units. They're gangs. And it's all connected.
I don't know if you remember when I interviewed Donald J. Vodica from California, the veteran, a veteran correctional officer who turned his peers in for the abuses and the drugs and everything that was going on in the California prison. But, you know, that's one of the things. They're in the United States of America, and I don't know why the United States of America, of all countries, have the most racist of all with people that are just so adamant about destroying the black race. And it really upsets me because, as I said, this is the United States. This is where we should all be proud that we are all from representing every country in the world. Other countries looked up to us for that reason, but other countries now look at the United States as being a piece of shit, if you want to ask me, because this country is about nothing anymore. It's gotten lower than it could ever stoop, lower than it could ever stoop. And again, the reason they don't want to get rid of the guns, but they're going to eventually, because people are now actually getting really starting to do the protest and everything else. But the reason they don't want to get rid of the guns is because and it's not so much the whites, the blacks or the reds or the browns or the beige that are talking about it. It's the whites that want to keep those guns moving. And then they target people. So, and I'm saying this, and I know there's a lot of people out there listening in the audience of the Caucasian race and advocates as well that I'm not going to like what I'm going to say. But I'm tired of our loved ones being targeted by the very people that caused them to stumble in the first place. And those who are in convictions are actually set up. And I'll tell you this, a lot of us have loved ones inside that have committed a crime for the first time. Unfortunately, they either were not thinking straight at the time because they were so messed up. But we need to start looking at this more closely. And if we have our counterparts, our Caucasian race out there that are siding with the things that are going on in this country with the people of color, if you're siding with us and you're showing us that you are in support of us, do more than just side with us. Get out there and try to talk to your friends, try to talk to your people, and try to let them know that they have to stop with this. They have to stop with it. Every time I hear stories like the story you're telling me, and I've heard so many of them from so many other people, it's pathetic to not only target your son, but also your grandson, and now you. And it doesn't need to be. Madeline Colburn, she's an advocate. She's been on the show before. She's been representing or helping these two females of color in Missouri who were wrongfully convicted. She was saying on the show one time she was getting death threats and everything else. You know, this is ridiculous. This is
because they took the country with guns. They came here and used guns to kill the natives to move them off their land. The natives had bows and arrows and spears, but they had guns. The Africans had bows and arrows and spears, but they used the gun to steal and enslave Africans. That's what they did. And they gave it to warring tribes to kill each other. So that's why they worship the gun, and they call themselves Christians when the Bible says that you're not supposed to worship idols. Isn't a gun an idol? That's not God. But these people worship their guns and can't imagine living life without a gun.
Well, it talks about in the Bible, it talks about the hypocrites too, people that say one thing and do another thing. We have a lot of them in this country.
Amen. Yes.
We have a lot of people in this country. But is that how you started to write the books?
Yes. After the murder of my grandson, I became really, really an activist with Oscar Grant Committee. And we went to we went to Ferguson after Mike Brown Jr. was killed. We went to Cleveland, you know, where Tamir Rice was killed. We've been in Chicago. We've been in New York, all over the country. And I met Sandra Bland's beautiful mother, and I met Eric Garner's mother, and all these beautiful people. Here they were mourning the passing, the murders of their sons and daughters, the unnecessary killings. You know, here you kill this young man, Tamir Rice, a boy with a gun. And these people that were on in D.C. today were describing what the gun did to their bodies of these young children. Can you imagine, you know, the gun and the one that killed Trayvon Martin, the gun, and how it tears up somebody's body, these kids' bodies. And these people want to keep their guns. I don't understand it. I don't. I mean, there are white kids that are getting killed, like in Parkland, with these guns. And they still want to keep their guns. You know? I've spent 75 years of my life living without a gun. I never went anywhere where I needed to have a gun. If I needed to have one, I didn't belong there. You know, that is my life. And I didn't teach my children to have guns. We didn't live in a house where there were guns or weapons. You know,
people of color are actually afraid to stop when the police stops them for speeding or for running a red light or whatever. They're actually afraid to stop for the police because they don't know how they're going to be treated. And
right.
This is so pathetic. And I say pathetic because this country is about nothing but hatred and racism. And it's pathetic.
Yes.
We have so many people in this country that sit back and do nothing because it's not happening to them.
Yeah. And I see in this community here that we have black people who buy into that notion. You know, they're not all the way there, you know, but they're kind of like hooked into the liberal whites. Because the DA here, Miss Nancy O'Malley, she has never tried. Well, she tried one police officer for killing a black person. He killed a black young man, and that's when she was thinking about running again. She killed it. She was charged, but she has never charged anyone for the murder of a black person here in Alameda County, except that one person or a brown person. And the police, there was a Hispanic young man who the highway patrol killed. The highway patrol killed several Hispanic young men. They followed them into the community in Oakland and killed them. And another thing I want to mention too is the last time I went into talk about my son, my grandson, to the police, the guy who interviewed me was actually an FBI agent because they're under mandate. So the FBI was there, and he was just as racist and disrespectful to me as the regular police. So, you know, and then he lied to my face. He told me a drive-by shooter killed my son, and I told him, that's what the neighbors said. He didn't know that I had talked to the I had interviewed those people that saw what happened. They said that he was being chased by a man with a gun. And then this FBI agent who was supposed to be Oakland police, you know, I'm looking down at the table and he told me there were no shell cases. And there were shell cases on the table between us. As he lied to my face. That's how disrespectful they are to me about the murder of my grandson. And then they tell me
They show no remorse. This is what upsets me too, is when the media, when someone goes to trial and they're found guilty and the media turns around and comes out with all this BS, they show no emotion.
Yeah.
Well, first of all, the media has, people that are in the media have no expertise in how somebody should demonstrate their remorse, because people, they respond according to their cultures, you know, and people of color have been oppressed for so many years that they have gotten so used to being oppressed, they have gotten so used to being targeted and abused that their emotions, just like overseas, we see Africa, we see the Middle East. These people have been so oppressed by the United States getting into their business when the United States has nothing to do with these countries. If they get into a conflict or a war with other countries, let them handle it themselves. But no, we have a government that has to get involved in everybody's business, but yet They can let their own country fall apart because they're letting us, they're letting every one of our citizens in this country down when they put all their effort, their money and everything into a European country. But yet if it's an African or Middle East country, they're ready to go to war with them too.
Yeah. I have heard that, you know, that like we don't, I've spoken to a young man from Liberia who says that the ore, ore that's being used, the ore in their country is being sent to the Ukraine to fight the Russians, you know, to make weapons to fight the Russians. And he said, told me, he said, well, I believe that they're going to, you know, bring their war to Liberia. Like Russia might come to Liberia and try to blow up the mines, you know, because...
In the long run, what's going to happen is what goes around comes around. This country's going to be hit.
Yeah.
They're not going to have. They're not going to have
Very
the. They're not going to have the weapons or the funds to fight themselves. And we already have internal. We already have domestic terrorists right in this country already. So we could get hit any time now. But the thing is, I want to say one thing. There was a prisoner, an individual who committed a first offense, who left the country. 30 years ago, an individual had psychological problems going on in his life, and he ended up firing one shot, and it was a fatal shot, and he ended up leaving the country. Do you know they didn't send the feds looking for him? They sent the local police from the very town that the shooting took place, and it was a racial thing. And they sent the local police. Now, that's never heard of. I've never heard of a local police and state troopers going after somebody that has left the country. Once they leave the country, it becomes a federal offense. But they
a
never
sent offense. Him.
But what they did when they finally brought him back in his trial, they dismissed the whole case as far as him leaving the country. He was found to be sentenced to life without parole. He was found guilty, but they dismissed that part because they knew that they sent people down there illegally. So they dismissed that.
Yeah.
But let that have been a Caucasian case, white on white.
It's
been a different story.
Yeah. And they here in Oakland, where the mayor continues to ask for more money for the police, they have the Oakland police. They have the sheriffs there. They have the state police there, they have the highway patrol there, they have the FBI there. I mean, that's like, and then they have, because one time when my grandson was about 15, I think it's 2015, they had some police coming to my door, banging on my door, talking about they were looking for someone. I said, who are you? And these were like, federal police or something like that. They said they were, I forgot who they were. Oh, federal marshals. Yeah, they were federal marshals. But they had no insignia. But they came and stood in the middle of my living room and took over my apartment, 7 in the morning, and my 15-year-old grandson was here. And the terror that I felt was not for myself, but for my 15-year-old grandson, the brother of Kerry Jr., who was murdered by the police. Yes, they did. And that's another one. They have like six or so agencies. Oh, and then they have ICE in Oakland. But yet they always say there's not enough police to stop the violence in Oakland. Why aren't there enough? And then surprise when you know these people break out in these mass killings. They've been taught not to respect life. They've been taught not to respect life. And they bring that home. They bring it home. And they kill us, but they kill on their own too. And they don't want to stop it because the NRA is giving all these politicians money. It's all about money.
That's it. You know, I had a lot of respect for some politicians, even in Massachusetts. I had a great deal of respect for them because they were really good people. But when I found that they knew about some activities going on in these prisons that were, and they were being lied to by the prison officials and they did nothing to help these prisoners, then that's when I lost my faith and trust in them, because if they can be sympathetic to a situation, and then they can call the prison and they can get a lie and know that they're lying and do nothing about it. That's our government system. That's our legal system in this country. You know, and it's a shame because of all the oppression that we have all gone through throughout the years, we have turned to the point where if we saw a crime, would we report it? Would we participate? Would we have anything to do with it? I don't know, because I see so much injustice with the government. I don't know if I'd want to get a family involved in having to deal with the injustices after the people were found committed and sentenced to prison, because they don't know how to hold people in prison to serve their time and then leave them alone and let them serve their time. They want more vengeance. They want more violence. And that's what's going on, especially when we have mass incarceration in this country. And mass incarceration of the wrongfully convicted. First of all, they need to stop releasing these men. I was going to ask you, did your son ever, was the Innocence Project involved with his case?
They came and they didn't do anything. They said they're talking about actual versus, what is it? They have some kind of standard. But to me, the Innocence Project is more interested after somebody's been in there 20 or 30 years, then they'll come and support them.
I think the sad thing about it is the Innocence Project, there are so many wrongfully convicted behind those prison walls that they are they have to be really almost like seeing more evidence like DNA or something like. But, you know, it's sad because we have lawyers in this country, a lot of corrupt, deceitful, lying lawyers. And you mentioned one or two of them earlier, but I can give you at least five that are corrupt and have thousands and thousands of dollars to do nothing. And they got away with it, because the Bar Association, I'm sorry to say, but a lot of times the Bar Association will do nothing. They will defend the lawyers because they are lawyers. And also the discipline councils of lawyers. So these lawyers get away with it. But if there were more honest lawyers, look at Lawyers Without Borders, I would love to see them connect and work together with the Innocence Project. Because Lawyers Without Borders and the Innocence Project are organizations that can do so much good. And it's just like with Mass General Hospital and a lot of these hospitals that I say they need to fight to go into these prisons and to treat these prisoners who are suffering from medical and psychological problems, because people that are contracted with the Department of Corrections, once they become contracted, they become like employees, and they pretty much take orders from the Department of Corrections, which is unfair because a lot of these prisoners are even afraid to go for medical treatment now because of permanent damage that has been done to some others while incarcerated.
Yeah. They won't even allow, if you're a family member who has someone in prison, the state of California will not allow you to contract with them, you have to go through this process, but they still manage to get people who are, they get these vendors who are dependent on people being in prison to make a living, you know, and they allow for private prison, but they don't want family members who have someone in prison to contract with them. That's like punishing us when we didn't do anything.
Another thing they do is they're getting all this funding from us taxpaying dollars. They're getting all this funding to provide these programs and these workshops and everything. And what are they doing? They have a director of volunteer services in all these prisons around the country. And these directors of volunteer services recruit volunteers to go in and do the jobs that they should be doing because they're getting funding for it. So they're getting all this money that's going nowhere but in their pockets while volunteers are going into the prisons to do the workshops and do the training. That's what people don't realize. And our government, they're just as stupid because they don't monitor these prisons. They don't monitor the Department of Corrections of the country. So all this money, just like money for food, these prisoners are being fed mashed potatoes and rice, anything to make them look fat, to make them seem like they're eating. Well, the good foods are going to the people that are employed with the department. This is all so much corruption. Right. So much corruption.
Yeah. And my son is, you know, he's been taking electrical apprenticeship program. And every time that he gets ready to, you know, move further along, they move him from the prison and he has to start all over again. So the prison where he's at now, he had to put his name on a list. And while he's waiting, they're telling him, oh, you should go work in the kitchen or you should go work cleaning toilets. And he's like, no, I'm going to wait. Because once you are up for parole, then you have to show that you have, you know, you've got a skill or you're working towards a skill. And he said they do everything to make sure that that does not.
You know something? I'm glad you brought this up because I know at least 75 to 100 prisoners that are going through the same thing, prisoners of color, being denied programs, being denied educational corresponding courses, being denied work programs. One prisoner got a job in the culinary division, and he got along good with the instructor. He was in there for two or three weeks before the prison officials went and tried to get the instructor to fire him. And when the instructor wouldn't do it, they went over the instructor's head to have this inmate fired. They try to keep the people of color down so that they, when they do go up for parole, like you say, they don't have anything to show for the time that they were in. And this is happening to so many prisoners of color around this country.
Yeah.
Anita,
they have him.
I've got to say this one thing. I have an organization, and I have an organization with prisoners from the same facility that this prisoner had his job taken from him in the culinary department. This prisoner had his job taken from him. The person, the client that we have that's Caucasian has the very job that was taken from that prisoner of color. That's why I say I know what you're saying is so true. Where are our legislative members? They're not going into the prisons to, you know, they should go in at least once every 3 or 4 months. Our legislative members should go in and meet with these prisoners. The media, before they report all these false news, fake news, they need to go into the prisons and get the actual information from the prisoners that's happening to them.
Yeah.
This is a problem in this country.
But, yeah. They have stopped them from going into the prison here in California. I don't know if they changed that, but they have stopped them from interviewing prisoners here in California.
Media?
Brown was the governor. They stopped it.
You mean the media from going in or legislative members from going in?
The media.
The media never tried to go in. No, you know what the media did go in? There was a woman. Her name was Elaine Brennan, or Bartlett, from New York. Years ago, she went into prison. She had children. She was delivering a package. She didn't even know what the package was. Her boyfriend or husband gave it to her to do. She went to prison, and they let the media in. They let a reporter go in because that reporter, Jennifer Garneman, ended up meeting with this client, this prisoner. She wrote the book with this prisoner, and when they came out, Because she even came, they came to Massachusetts to do the book signing. And I spoke with Elaine on the phone one night, and I said, are you getting anything from this? She said that the one that wrote the book told her that after she pays off the people at the prison for allowing her to go in and write this book with this woman, and after paying off her boss for letting her have the time off, and after paying off all these others, then Elaine would start getting her royalties as well. But this is when the media goes in. When they are going into the prison, they got a reason for it. They're either writing books off of somebody else's blood, sweat, and tears, or there's some media behind it, because the media does not go in to meet with the prisoners. They go in maybe to meet with the staff. But these are the kind of corrupt things that go on even with them. But Anita, I want to say we have about 5 minutes left. If you can tell the audience how to contact you, your books can be found on the internet. Just type in Anita Wills. It's all over the place. But if you can just tell the audience how they can get in touch with you, if they want to do any volunteer work or help in any way with your case.
Right. Yes, and you can, my email address is ntawls@gmail.com. I have, if anyone wants to donate, I'm accepting donations on behalf of my son at WhatsApp at, it's $Wills, W-I-L-L-S, 920.
Wait a minute, Anita, it's not WhatsApp, it's Cash App.
Oh, excuse me, Cash App, I'm sorry.
And I was also going to say your email address again. If you can give it, the last letter is an S or an F. Just let them know that.
It's N-T-A-W-L-S. Yes, it's an S. Mm-hmm. At gmail.com. Mm-hmm.
Okay, now again, for donations?
And that's at Cash App at $Wills, W-I-L-L-S, 920.
Okay.
But if anyone is donating, please email me first, and then I'll know how to look for it. I'll know to look for it.
And Anita, I'm just going to say this real quick. I want to have you back on again because your story, I mean, it's so extensive. But finish what you were saying.
Mm-hmm. My book is called A Nation of Flaws, Just Us in the Homeland, and it's a historical accounting of policing in the United States from colonization to this day, and how they how the murders of our young people, how they treat the murders of black and brown people versus how they treat mass murderers and spree killers who are white, and how they're able to bring white males who murder in without killing them. But they will kill an innocent black man, shoot him in the back, someone who is assumed to be a criminal. They will shoot them if they turn and walk away. Just like they took that kid in Buffalo alive, they took him alive after he killed 11 people. But yet they killed somebody like Mike Brown Jr., who was, not even armed.
If they're properly trained, they can shoot somebody in the leg. They can shoot them in the hand. If they're carrying a gun, shoot their hand so the gun will fall out of their hand. They can shoot them in the leg to disable them if they have a knife. There's so many ways that they can disable them without killing them. Years ago, they had trained police officers that were trained to do just that. So I don't know what happened between then and now. These young police officers are not being trained well enough to be able to know the difference between shooting someone in the leg and the hand and shooting someone in the head and the heart.
They shoot you like you're an animal, like they're out hunting to kill. Shoot to kill. They don't shoot to bring you in, because they're not supposed to be judge, jury, and executioner. They're supposed to be peace officers who bring you in and you have a trial, a fair trial. But they don't do that.
They have to remember one thing. A lot of them don't realize that they don't believe it'll ever happen, but there is a God. And what goes around comes around. And believe me, God created all colors. He didn't create just white. He didn't create just the Caucasian race. He created all races. Again, this is the United States. But again, Anita, thank you so much for coming on.
Yes. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
We have to have you back on again because your story, you have been through so much, not only losing your son, wrongfully convicted too. But, and, you know, I have to say this real quickly too. I am very upset with the NAACP. I'm very upset with Al Sharpton because Al Sharpton puts on a good show with the National Action Network. But since he's gotten before the media in his own show on CNN News, he forgets, or maybe he never did anything in the first place. But these are cases where they should be doing a lot, and they're not doing anything. NAACP, they're focused on children now because they know education, because they know that that's where the easy money comes from, when their own people are dying.
Yes.
So we are going to, we're going to be ending this episode now with Anita. And again, we will be having Anita back on with us. She has to talk more about her situation, her story, and also please do help her in any way possible. Anita, you've been through a lot, and I admire you for everything that you've been doing all these years.
Yes, and I'm still standing. I'm still out here, and believe me, it's going to end nicely. Wait.
Well, you know,
we're going to win.
There's certain people I admire, and that was a Mary Neal who died. I don't know if you remember Mary Neal. Mary Neal was very...
Yes, I remember her.
Mary Neal, Anita Will, Madeline Colburn, all of you girls, you have all been exceedingly helpful to so many people. While we have people in power that are being paid to do more than they're doing, and you girls, you have all been doing it, and you've been doing it out of your heart and not out of your pocket. So thank you so, so much. And we will episode now.
Thank you, Leona. I'll be talking to you soon.
Thank you, Anita. You take care.
Bye.